Hello and welcome to On Top of PR. I'm your host, Jason Mudd, and we've got a fun episode today with Alejandro from Rainier, and he is talking a little bit about his company and the power of storytelling and how they went through a process of identifying that they wanted to be the best storytellers in their industry, the impact that's had on the company so far, and the impact they think it'll have in 3 years from now. This is a really good episode. I'm glad you're here. You'll be glad you're here too. As you're listening to this episode and you're finding it thought-provoking and insightful, hope you'll take a moment to share it with your colleagues also.
Welcome to On Top of PR with Jason Mudd, presented by ReviewMaxer.
Hello and welcome to On Top of PR. I'm your host, Jason Mudd. You're tuned in to another great episode. We are joined today by my friend and our guest today, Alejandro Barbero. He's with Rainier. Welcome to the show, Alejandro.
Hey, Jason. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. I'm glad you're here. And we want to welcome you to the show by asking you to introduce yourself real quick. Give us a couple sentences about who you are and what you do at Rainier.
Absolutely. Yeah. So my name is Alejandro Barbero. I work for Rainier. I'm the director of strategic communications. I've been with the company about 17 and a half years now in different capacities. And a little bit about me, I'm a family guy. If you ask my team, the way I always say, family comes first. And then I'm a strategy guy. I love big ideas. I love strategizing, and I love getting things done as well.
Excellent. Excellent. We can tell you're a family man with all your lovely family photos in the background. So thanks for sharing those with us. I'm very familiar with Rainier, having, known you and the company for decades, or at least the company for decades and knowing you for years. But I bet most of our audience has never heard of Rainier. So why don't you explain, give us kind of the elevator pitch or the background story on Rainier real fast.
Absolutely. So company was founded in 1926 in Washington State. We are in the forestry business. And today we have 2.7 million acres of timberlands in the US and in New Zealand, in two regions in the US South and the Pacific Northwest, and also in New Zealand. We have three main businesses, the forestry business, the real estate business, and then what we call the land resources business, which is it's a couple dozen of different businesses that will include things like your hunting and recreation, your cell tower leases, your billboards, your pine straw leases, things of that nature. I always say this way, some you do while the trees grow, some you'll do, instead of growing trees. But it's a collection of different businesses.
Right. Absolutely. And so years ago, the company decided to focus on real estate and timber and spun off its paper mill or manufacturing facilities. Is that right?
That is correct. So the company, one thing I love about the company is the company has taken multiple different shapes over its almost 100-year-old life. In our current shape, back in 2014, we spun out our manufacturing division. We call it Performance Fibers at the time. So they have two mills, one in Jessup, Georgia, one in Fernandina Beach, Florida, where they manufacture high-purity cellulose pulp. And we spun them out as a publicly traded company. And today we are what we call a pure play, which is basically a company that doesn't have any manufacturing. We only focus on timber.
Okay, excellent. So tell us, how did you get into this industry and profession?
That's a great question. So it's a fun story. So rewind to 2003. I finished my MBA in the University of Michigan in probably one of the worst job markets that the world has seen. I started my job search, school finished, and I continued my job search. And there was a posting about a particular role. I was very clear on the role that I wanted to have. I wanted a sort of strategy with a heavy mix of finance type role. And I was on my quest to find that job, and Rainier had it. They posted it on the university's website, And, you know, next thing you know, that led to multiple interviews. And about October, they made the offer. And November 17th of 2003, that's when I started. And then as far as the profession, my professional career has been very interesting. There's a common thread in everything I've done, which is the strategy piece, whether corporate or business strategy. But I've been in multiple different capacities where I apply those sort of strategic, you know, planning skills. And, you know, today I run the communication function, and, you know, we're all about sort of building a brand and building a brand strategy, building a communication strategy. But I've done business management before. I've done strategic planning for divisions before. I've done corporate development before. So multiple different roles within the company, but all with this sort of common thread of the strategy behind it.
Gotcha. Well, it sounds like you have an eclectic mix of experiences, and one I'm sure that's very valued with the multiple roles and departmental experience. Bringing all that into corporate communications and marketing strategy is probably very helpful to the enterprise.
Yeah, you know, I always like to stay, you know, there's a line between, you know, what we dub the support functions and what we dub, you know, the operations. And I always like to kind of straddle the line, like be on that line. And sometimes I'm on the business side, sometimes I'm on the support side, and then back on the business, back on the support. And that always gives me that, you know, kind of two sides of the story perspective. You know, I'm like, you know, one example today from the communication side, I work with the hunting and recreation team. And, you know, 7 years ago, or 8 years ago, I was sitting on their role working with the communication function. So I kind of know, you know, what they're up against and what they need, and I can help them better by having been there in their shoes before.
Right. It's very a holistic view, and you bring a lot of experience and background and probably a very valued collaboration to the equation also.
That's the plan.
So I've got to ask you, remind me, you know, what is your what's your origin or culture? Obviously, you've got an accent, so tell me more about that.
So I grew up in Argentina. That's where I'm from. That's where my wife is from, and both our families are from. I went to engineering school. I became a civil engineer a long, long time ago. As I was sort of finishing school, you know, engineering only gives you so much, and I'm grateful for having gone to engineering, but I'm also knowing, you know, some of the limitations that I had, you know, as a professional, if I wanted to pursue a corporate career, which is what I wanted to do. So soon before finishing, you know, I had this idea that, you know, an MBA in a different country was something that I wanted to chase and pursue. And, you know, a number of years after I graduated, it kind of became a reality back in 2001 when I moved to the States. It's about 20 years this year.
Gotcha. Well, I'm going to ask you next about what's a typical day. Walk me through it. Obviously, your routine has probably changed in the COVID era. But, you know, if you could find some balance between working from home and when you used to work in the office, what's a typical day for you?
Yeah, I would say, you know, there are many things that changed because of the pandemic, but my routine is probably one that I improved. And so it typically goes about 6:30. It's when the alarm goes off. Kids up, and I take them to school every morning. So we typically around 7:10, 7:15, get on the car with the dog and go to school, to take him to school. And then quick breakfast on the way back, and then it's planning the day, and then there's typically a host of conference calls or Zoom calls that I'm in through the day, and it's a mix of you know, thinking time, action time, and conference calling time. About twice a week, I pick him up from school kind of halfway through the day, and then it's family time. It's dinner and homework, and, you know, if we have time for a, you know, a game or a movie through the week, we'll squeeze that in, or you know, or back to bed, maybe a movie, my wife and I, and we'll start again next year, next day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I knew you were very family focused, and I appreciate that. My son is in high school and they don't start till 9. And so giving, you know, some days I'm able to give him a ride to school with the dog in tow also, right? But that really interferes with my work day, you know, because it's kind of seems late in the day for me for school to start at 9. But, you know, I love telling him, man, when I was in school, you know, we were starting, if it wasn't 7 a.m., it was certainly 8, not 9. So tell me, in your current role, who does your company want to reach? Who's kind of your target audience for your communications?
That's a great question. We defined it in, we basically target 5 different audiences. And those are employees, future employees, communities, and then we have investors and customers. And I'm thinking sort of, you know, the corporate brand. We have a few sub-brands that are sort of more on the B2C world. They may have different interests, but at a corporate level, those are the 5 that we target. And my group specifically, we focus on employees, on future employees, and communities. And we use the word community, you know, in the loose sense of community, that, you know, you can slice that onion in multiple different ways. But, you know, we sort of use the word community in a loose way. We are, you know, as we continue to evolve the communication function in the company, you know, we start to get focused more, you know, more laser focus on, okay, when you say communities, what exactly are you talking about? And then we have a group that has a phenomenal capacity managing investor relations and investor relation communication. So they handle that. And then as far as customers go, what I always say is, what a B2B company. You know, most of our business is relationship driven. And so the way we work, you know, on my group, the way we tackle that audience is we focus on that audience is making sure that our employees wear their pride on the company really high. So we really focus on the employee side, and more so than on the direct customer communication. We want to make sure employees are empowered, they feel pride about the company, they're excited about what they do. And if they do all those things, then magic's going to happen. You know, no brochures or no communication piece that I could do on our end will ever, you know, supplant the trust that our employees build on a day-to-day basis. So, so in summary, we are focusing on employees, you know, capturing their pride and making them feel pride about the company, you know, making sure everyone knows who they are and what they do. We're focused on future employees, anywhere from, you know, making sure we go talk to, you know, kids in school. And when I say kids in school, you know, middle schoolers, high schoolers, elementary schoolers, about forestry as an option, we engage in the community, or we go talk to kids in forestry school. And then we'll focus on communities, which is, you know, I think it's probably the piece that I'm, you know, I'm most passionate about. And it goes because for the longest time, I think our industry and our companies were conditioned to basically stay under the radar. You know, it was a good thing to not be on the front page of the paper. And what that led to was, you know, if you, you know this far better than I do, Jason. If you don't tell your story, well, you're letting somebody else tell your story. And I think our industry has suffered from, you know, not being able, you know, not be willing or not taking the initiative in tell our own story. So back in 2017, when we kind of got into, you know, hey, we gotta pay attention to the brand and refresh our brand and start growing the brand. That was sort of the driving factor. You know, there was a clear opportunity for us as a company to take that leadership role. You know, we gotta show the industry this is how you can be a good storyteller. And so we embarked on this. You know, we planted the vision that we want to be the best storytelling company in the industry. Period. And we just started kind of marching that way. And you know, we built the platform, and then we built the engine, and then you know, we put the people in place. And we've been in this journey of, you know, being storytellers for the industry for, I don't know, 2-3 years now, and you know, recognized as leaders within the industry, in which is grateful to be, you know, it's a great position to be in. But most importantly, it's, you know, it's helping the entire industry, you know, just be better appreciated and changing, you know, some of the misperceptions or misconceptions that there could be about, you know, what forestry is and what forestry does. And, you know, my team has done a fantastic job with the storytelling and in multiple ways. You know, we get anecdotes. There was one anecdote last year where the investor team is working with an investor that doesn't invest in Rayonier at this time. And another investor that does invest in the company, you know, has invested in the company, send them one of our videos to this investor that we were trying to bring in and say, hey, this is the company you want to invest in and watch this video. These are good guys. And you know, that's just music to our ears, just that happening. And right. There's a few of those that like that. So, that's that's what we've made the most progress from a communication perspective.
Excellent. Well, Alejandro, we're going to take a quick break here and come back on the other side with some additional questions. And just want to make sure we give a shout out to ReviewMaxer, our presenting sponsor. They are online at ReviewMaxer.com and help you manage your online reviews and get more online reviews. Without them, this show wouldn't be possible. So we want to say thank you to ReviewMaxer, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to On Top of PR with your host, Jason Mudd. Jason is a trusted advisor to some of America's most admired and fastest growing brands. He is the managing partner at Axia Public Relations, a PR agency that guides news, social, and web strategies for national companies. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back. I'm Jason Mudd, your host for On Top of PR. And today I'm joined by Alejandro from Rayonier. Alejandro, we're so glad you're here and thank you for this great conversation. I wanted to ask you next, kind of focusing on who you describe as a customer at Rayonier. Who is that person? Do you have an avatar or a buyer persona you've identified for buyers?
We actually do. So, as I was saying before, you know, on the forestry side, most of our customers are B2B, and on the real estate side, we have different segments of our real estate division. The one that I manage, the marketing for, we do. We have five, and you know, that we're constantly looking at, and we're constantly challenging ourselves on, you know, are these the right ones? And we recently undergone a project where we looked at yet again, and it was clear to us that there was one that, you know, it was probably not as relevant at this point, but there was one that was missing, and so we kind of went to the switcheroo project of, you know, just adding one and dropping the other one, but definitely something we keep an eye on the ball on that.
Excellent. And so, what is it that your customers? What is it they know about your company today, would you say?
I think it depends on what side of the company. You know, the one that I was just talking about is Radiant, a real estate subsidiary. And in specifically, you know, there's a product line we call Radiant Places, and which is mostly people looking for, you know, a bigger piece of land or an investment. You know, not people looking for, you know, a home site being, you know, the half an acre, quarter acre on suburban US, but more, you know, the one, the two, the three, the 50, the 20 acre type. And they know a lot because, you know, a lot of what we do is content marketing, and we're on it, developing content. We have a blog called Rethink Rural, where we help people, you know, understand what it's like to have this sort of more rural lifestyle, and we help them, you know, if they're on the fence, we help them transition to it. So they know a lot about who we are and what we do.
Excellent. And in an ideal world, what is it that you would want them to know? If you could brainwash or wave a magic wand over your audience, what would they know, your customers?
I would say, you know, clearly that we have the solution to their problems. That's what, you know, I'm selling a dream. I'm not selling, you know, a piece of dirt. I'm selling a dream. I'm selling a, you know, a kid's running on the background, somebody on an ATV, somebody on a, you know, on a four-wheeler, somebody building a barn and, you know, enjoying a different lifestyle. We got that. We can, you know, we can make those dreams happen because we got what they need in the place they need it. So that's what I'd love them to know.
And so if they knew that, what would you want them to then do in return? What's a call to action or an action you'd like to see them take?
Well, clearly, you know, we work with a set of brokers, with a pool of brokers across, you know, the entire footprint, and call them now before we run out of land. Call them.
So you want them to call Rayonier?
No, we want to call them. We want them to call the brokers. You know, most of our transactions are managed through brokers, and so we want them to call the brokers and sign the piece of paper.
Okay. Well, let's talk about what's new. What are you working on right now that has you excited?
Well, there's one thing. We through the pandemic, it actually goes back to 2019. We took a look at our values, our corporate values, and we realized that there was one value that was not there that should be there, and that sort of triggered this process where we said, you know, before we add the value and we remove one, why don't we just stop the ball and take a look at them, you know, as a value set, and challenge ourselves to think about, you know, is this value set, you know, is this timely? You know, what should our values be, and what are our values, and is there a disconnect there? And this is not it's the natural evolution of the company. You know, we're a 92-year-old company, 94-year-old company rather, and so it's the natural evolution. And so last year, you know, I put a team together, and we worked with the senior team very closely, and just taking a look at our values and understanding, you know, what makes us different, what makes us unique, what gets us excited. You know, if you think about the typical Rayonier person, what are they made of? and so we developed a new value set. We refreshed our values. And now I'm in the midst of launching the communication campaign to let the organization know that we have done that, and to get everyone excited about this new value set. So we're wrapping up. We have one more video interview to do early February. We're in the middle of editing, doing, you know, we're going to do collateral. We're going to do, you know, we're going to help leaders in the company cascade the communication. So we're working on developing all that content. So it's been a great project to get us here. It was not easy. Because it's one of those where kind of you know it when you see it. And so we had to iterate multiple times until we finally got to a place where we say, yeah, that's it. That's the value set. These are the values that define who we are and what are we made of. And we have a really good, you know, plan for rolling this out to the organization that you know, it's coming out soon.
Very nice. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That sounds exciting, and certainly a lot of work. I know when we were working on our core values here at our agency, you know, that was a difficult challenge and required significant collaboration and input from, you know, various members of the team, and then you've got to build consensus and help articulate and communicate why you chose those values and what they mean, and then live and breathe those values. And, you know, I think the expression is, you know, recruit, hire, promote, train and even fire if need be to those core values and live and breathe those core values. And so
and honestly the one, I think the one golden nugget for us was to, and I'm gonna say it and it sounds so silly and easy, but it was to listen and to listen, you know, with intent. And and the second we stopped and listen, when I say we, it's the team, you know, that was sort of working with the senior team. The second we stopped and listened, those values were in front of us, because that's, you know, you hear the senior team talking about them all the time. So up until that point, it was difficult. We try, you know, what about this and what about that? And let's go here, let's go there. And they were all like, maybe. But the second we stopped and listened, and you know, with intent and about what was being said and how, magic just happened, and we got there very quickly, and you could see it in their faces. You know, the entire senior team excited about yes. That's it. Mm-hmm. So it was fun.
That's really good advice. You know, on previous episodes, we've talked about the idea that you know, the best thing you can do is listen to your audience, and more importantly, make your audience, or not more importantly, equally important, or there after you've listened, is make your audience be the star, right? And the spotlight, and focus mm-hmm. on them in your storytelling. If your storytelling is all about us, me, and I, nobody cares. But if you can shift the spotlight onto them and say, you know, you and we help you, or you'll be able to do this, and focus on the benefits of working with them, suddenly you've got an audience who is more engaged and more interested, because, you know, we're all a little bit selfish. And as soon as your marketing can shift from being selfish about you and being selfish about your audience, you'll see a lot more success, in my experience.
Yeah, and I could not agree more about that. And, you know, there's two things that come to mind. One is, you know, you got to walk, you got to help the audience get to where you are. And, you know, in this particular project, you know, us as a team, we went on a journey to dissect who we were. And then we forgot to bring people along. So the first meeting, you know, they were looking at us like, okay, you're 20 miles away. I don't see you. I don't know what you're doing. And so, you know, we had to pause and okay, say, okay, well, this is the journey we just walked on together. And okay. And then the other piece too is, you know, it's authenticity, and it's a word that is used a lot, you know, this day and age. And for us, it's key. You know, you'll hardly see any stories that we do where you see the senior team on the stories, or where you see the leaders on the stories. You get to see the people that actually get the job done. Mm-hmm. And those are real people like you and I. And you know, there's nothing different, you know, about them and us. And their story, it's what you want to hear. And the story told by them, it's a lot more relevant and meaningful than if it's washed down, you know, even unintentionally, by several layers of, you know, sort of leadership and management. So we make it a point that, you know, any stories we do, the people actually doing the job, those are the ones that you're going to hear from.
Nice. Yeah. I like that. That's very real, especially when you're, for example, you know, my background's in journalism, and when you're working with the news media, they don't always want to hear, they definitely don't want to hear from the marketing person or PR person. They want to talk to either key leadership, thought leaders and influencers in the company, or the person who's, you know, actually developing the product or doing the engineering or working on the floor or working in the trenches, so they can explain, you know, the product in detail, or the you know, the manufacturing stages and that kind of thing. So, well, we're quickly running out of time. So let me try to ask questions here. Thinking about the future, if we were having this conversation 3 years from today and you were looking back on those last 3 years, what would have happened in your life, both personally and professionally, for yourself and the company, that would make you so happy in those 3 years? So it's three years from today.
3 years from today, I probably have one kid that drives, and that scared the bejesus out of me, but that's real. And then professionally, I think what you'll see is we manage to empower people within the company to be storytellers alongside with us. And I always say the same thing. We're never going to be the best storytelling company in the industry if it's up to just the four of us in communications. Mm-hmm. We need to bring all 400 people in the company and let them, you know, empower them to be storytellers. So that's where we're going. That's the future.
Good. And so it sounds like one of the obstacles to overcome to get you there is what you just said, which is, you know, allowing others in the organization to be empowered to tell that story and to put the spotlight on them as the storyteller, as opposed to somebody from corporate communications telling the story.
That's exactly, yes, that's it. That's a roadblock that we're working on removing.
Well, so if that's an obstacle, tell me, what advantages do you have in getting there?
In getting there?
Mm-hmm. What's working in your favor to get there?
I think, you know, the momentum of the wave that we built over the last 3 years, and the impact that taking a different route, I suppose, you know, on the communications front, not being silent, but rather, you know, being loud and telling what we do, because we do good stuff. You know, I don't need to fake it. What we do is just good. And so just being real and kind of having built that wave of and the momentum that we have, that's pushing us in that direction.
Excellent. So what would it mean to you personally and to the company to get there in 3 years from now when you're sitting in that moment and it's 3 years from now and you're enjoying the success? What would that mean to you personally and what would that mean to the company?
I think for the company, it's going to be huge. And what I mean by that is, and I think your audience knows this far better than I do. It's, you know, we're making the company human. By getting people to talk about what they do, it's mm-hmm. not, you know, a piece of concrete anymore. It's not a, you know, we always said that a company is an article of, you know, it's just an article of incorporation. What makes mm-hmm. a company is the people. And so, and it's very hard to argue with people. You may agree or may you disagree, but it's hard to argue with people. It's hard to be pissed off at people. But you might be, you know, you may argue, against the corporation. So for the company, is going to be great. And, you know, we're going to change the perception of, you know, what people think of forestry as an industry and people are going to understand how forestry helps, right. You know, rather than not. So that's the professional side. And then for me personally, you know, when we embark on this journey, I told my team that we were going to create history and we have, and we nice. Will. So, you know, we're going to look back and say, hey, you know, look at what we've done. This is, it's just huge. It's awesome.
That's great. What is some of the best advice you've ever received?
I've been thinking about that. I think it's two things. One is, and this is one, I'm going to say just one, because this is one that I talk to my kids a lot about, and it's stuff happens. You know, you have little to no control over the stuff that happens, whether good or bad. But what defines you is what do you do when stuff happens? Mm. So, you know, you may get in a dire situation. You may get in a difficult situation. You may have almost no control in whether you found yourself in that situation or not. But what defines you and who you are is what do you do when you find yourself there? And to me, that's super meaningful. You know, you can get pissed off. You can, you know, lock yourself in a room, or you can just face it and see what you do with it and, you know, and just try to get through it. So that's one that it's very meaningful to me and one that I talk to my kids, you know, almost on a daily basis, you know, because they're at that age where they're, you know, building their own personalities and character.
Right.
And that's what defines your character. What do you do when stuff happens? And I typically don't say stuff. It starts with S, but it's not stuff.
you're reminding me, I'm always talking about the importance of one, improvising, and two, integrity. And I think those go hand in hand with exactly what you're saying is that, you know, and especially in the PR profession, I've learned you have to improvise. And so you may have woken up and thought you were doing A, B, and C, and then the world turned upside down and you're doing one, two, and three instead. You know, one of my favorite social media pros will say, yeah, well, if we post about that today, we've already got these other posts scheduled. And I'm like, okay, well, just improvise, you know, like things change and you've got to learn to improvise. And then to your point, integrity, you know, when the going gets tough, you know, people get to see your true character. Here's one of my favorite questions to ask. If you left your current job today, what advice would you give your successor?
That is a very good question. I'd say build relationships, and build more relationships. That's it.
I love
it. Spend a lot of time building relationships within the company and outside the company. You know, what I do matters if and only it helps the company. You know, we don't do... You know, we have our own sort of set of priorities within my team. And one is intentionality. You know, we're very intentional about what we do. We don't do things because we like them. We don't do things because we like the design of a brochure. Because we do things for a reason and because, you know, they matter to the company. And so I can only know what matters to the company, you know, you can be very, very smart and figure it out on your own. But mm-hmm. most people, at least me, you know, you got to have those relationships and you got to make those connections internally to understand, okay, what is it that it's, right. you know, what's the rock on the shoe that we got to remove.
Great. Okay. So the last question, and then we'll have to jump is, the person that's replacing you in your role, what would he or she do differently than you're doing in your role today?
I don't know. I think, you know, I've seen this, you know, in my career up until now, we all bring something different to the table.
Right.
You know, what I bring to the table is the strategy and is connecting actions on the ground with the vision. You know, my predecessor, you know, whomever succeeds me, you know, may bring a different skill set and may do things differently. And I don't know.
It's a question I like to ask myself to make sure that I'm focused on what's most important and, you know, make sure that I'm keeping myself sharp and thinking, you know, futuristically and also just in an attitude of reform, right? So what would somebody come in behind me and do absolutely differently and why? And then am I not doing that because I'm afraid to, or because I don't value it, or because it's not to my strengths? And then I adjust and pivot either myself or my team accordingly.
That's a great point. I always say that the most clarity that one has around any job is the first 90 days when you yes. you know, when you're not consumed with the, you know, yeah. when you don't get so low in the ground that it's hard to see, you know, yes. the forest for the trees. So I'm going to put that in practice.
Well, I like the cliche forest through the trees from somebody who works at Rainier. So I really like that. That's good. Yeah.
Well, I had to say.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity to connect. If our audience enjoyed the conversation today, how do they connect with you best through, you know, social media or email, or what's their preferred way to kind of follow you and stay in touch with you?
Easiest way, LinkedIn, Alejandro Barbero in LinkedIn. If not, alejandro.barbero@rainier.com, but it's so long that I'm going to have to spell it. So typically LinkedIn is the easiest way to find me. And, okay. And that's a great sort of starting point to spring from there.
Is there anything
you can see rainier.com/stories. That's the other place to go to. You can see all the fun stuff we do.
Anything else you wanted to close on?
No, much. I you know, I think you said it on the onset, we've known each other for a number of years. I do appreciate, you know, the discussion. It's refreshing, and I do appreciate the invite.
My pleasure. Thanks for being our guest, and we look forward to staying in touch.
Thank you.
Well, that does it for another great episode of On Top of PR. I really enjoyed the authenticity of this interview and this session together. I'm sure you will too. And do us a favor, if you enjoyed this episode, please like, follow, subscribe, and even better would be if you shared this episode with a colleague or left us a review so others can find us too. So once again, thanks for tuning in, and really appreciate you and your support. Last shout out to our sponsor, Review Maxer. Be well, everybody.
This has been On Top of PR with Jason Mudd, presented by Review Maxer.